Thank you for tuning in to another episode of an Open Water Swimmers podcast. You may or may not know that I am endeavouring on my own set of ultramarathon swims this year and next. Clearly, compared to some of my incredible guests over these seasons, these events are relatively piddly. But nonetheless, I'm booked to swim the 65 kilometres around Jersey in September of 2023, and then I have my own English Channel solo attempt in August of 2024. I'm raising money for a charity called Amaze, who help families who have children with disabilities. They're based in Sussex. So if you're enjoying this podcast, please do head to my Just Giving page, which you can find on the blurb of the pod, or also if you go to my Instagram handle, OWSwimPod, it's there for you to find. Please donate anything at all. All donations are welcome, no matter how big or small. You can think of it, if you like, as just buying me a coffee. If you want to hear more about my story and why I am raising money for Amaze, then check out Intrepid Water and fellow swim podcaster Shannon Keegan and her interview with me back in May of 2022. Thank you. Enjoy the show.
I'm Lorraine Candy, and you are listening to an Open Water Swimmers podcast.
It's episode 7, season 3 of an Open Water Swimmers podcast with me, Will Ellis. Thank you to everyone for listening. Just a reminder to go ahead and leave me a rating wherever you get your podcast from, and also to follow the social media channels at OWSwimPod on Instagram and the Twitter. I loved talking to today's guest. She is an author, editor, and fellow podcaster. She co-hosts the Podcast from Midlife podcast and her first book, Mum, What's Wrong With You? 101 Things Only the Mothers of Teenage Girls Know, was a Sunday Times top 10 bestseller. She is a former editor of Cosmo, Elle, and Sunday Times Style, and a mum of four children aged 10 to 19. She's currently writing a new book about the experiences of women in midlife, and she is an avid swimmer and cold water dipper, and, as you'll see, uses the water as part of her mental health toolkit. It was a really great privilege to be able to chat to Lorraine Candy. So it's my absolute pleasure to welcome onto the podcast Lorraine Candy. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your Monday morning to speak to me today.
No, I'm very excited. I love talking about swimming.
Well, you're in good company then. You're in good company. I think the same is true of most of our listeners. Anyway, so why do you swim? Obviously, not everyone starts in the open water, this being an Open Water Swimmers podcast. So it might be, why did you take up swimming? Why do you now continue to swim? And what is it about the water that sort of keeps you coming back for more?
Well, I'm a late life swimmer. So I grew up in Cornwall by the coast, but I didn't really learn properly to swim at school. And I couldn't do front crawl or anything like that when I started swimming. But I guess my story is kind of pertinent for any midlife women you have listening. I'm 54 now, and I started swimming properly outside when I was about 46 or 47. And I had been going, which I only sort of found out in retrospect, through something called the perimenopause, which affects women in the 10 to 12 years before the menopause, which is roughly around the age of 51. And it has a variety of symptoms, but some of the main symptoms and the ones that affected me mostly were, it really affected my mental health. It gave me extreme anxiety. I had panic attacks for the first time in my life, and it all came out of the blue. So I started to look at, I'm a journalist. I was editing Elle magazine at the time, shortly before I went on to edit Sunday Times Style. But for years and years, I've been a journalist since the age of 16. So for me, I was constantly looking for solutions, having twice turned down antidepressants because I just didn't think they would work for me. I know they do for people, but it felt like something physically was wrong. So I was in the research of doing that. I had learnt that keeping fit, really fit, would be very helpful. I mean, I think anyone with mental health issues would know that keeping really fit is really good for you. It just changes your hormonal balance. It changes your feeling. It gets you outside. It drops you into a community. So I started doing kind of mini triathlons, but I hurt my knee, as all midlife people do. And they, you know, I did some triathlons. My knee was very painful. It was quite difficult to run longer. And I did a couple of half marathons. And I was training for a marathon. And it just didn't seem right. And my trainer at the time said, well, let's focus on the swimming. Because you seem a bit fearful in the water, and I was slightly fearful in the water in a wetsuit. But I, looking back, I was fearful because I didn't enjoy those race starts. I found it quite traumatic, and all the kind of training I was doing was in big groups, triathlon, swim training, and it wasn't as enjoyable as I thought it could be. But there was just something about the water that really made me think, I think I'd probably enjoy this if I did it without the competitive element. So I started to, you know, I wasn't running. So I started to swim, and I thought, well, I don't really need a wetsuit. It was in the summer if I'm going to learn to swim properly. And I had proper swimming lessons with Swim for Try, actually, sort of individual lessons so I could learn front crawl. But I actually, oddly, was more fearful in the pool than I was out of the out in the open water. And I started to swim at Shepparton, and I just found being in nature and, you know, being able to breathe and see swans with their little babies and being able to see the trees and all of that, it just felt really meditative for me. I had four children, and at the time they were all living at home with me. I had two older teenagers. So I had found a place where no one could talk to me, no one could contact me, and I could concentrate on something in a very specific way. I couldn't let my brain spiral out of control, you know, and I was learning about technique and everything. It just felt like I'd found my place. And I couldn't meditate. I find meditating quite tricky, but it just counting as I swam, learning, you know, looking at how my stroke was changing, all of that just felt really. And then obviously there was this huge benefit of the cold. As it started to get colder and colder, I just felt better and better in the water. So, you know, I mean, I sometimes do swim with a wetsuit if it's very cold, but I just found the cold water, and there's an enormous amount of research being done actually by Southampton University now on the benefits of cold water and midlife women and what they're going through and the changes in your brain, the hormonal changes in your brain. So it came to me then, and we did a really gullible kind of, I mean, innocent thing. We signed up. We thought we'll sign up for a swim. We'll do a big one. And our trainer, we had a swim teacher who said, Dan Bullock, well, you know, do a big one. I'll work with you. So we signed up for Lake Geneva to swim Lake Geneva, which is 70 kilometers. So it's twice the length of the channel. It'd be like swimming there and back as a 6-person relay. We just didn't know what we didn't know. So we were really innocent about it. We just signed up for it. And, you know, people said you won't be able to do it, you're beginner swimmers, that it was five of us. It was, I wrote a piece in the Sunday Times, and someone contacted me who lived nearby saying, I've seen you at the Lido, I'd like to swim this as well. She was quite a good swimmer, actually, much better swimmer. She'd done the Bosphorus swim and other swims. So, but we had done no swims apart from Shepparton, Blenheim Lake, and, you know, mini triathlons where you're in the water for 15, 20 minutes. But I have to say, it was just life-changing. It was a really life-changing swim. We did it in, I think it was around 30 hours or something. So it was a fairly respectable time. We trained really hard. We learned to swim. But I look back now, that was 4 years ago. I look back now and I'm so much a better swimmer. And I wish I'd been. You know, we were lucky to get a place. Someone dropped out. A team had dropped out. It's quite hard to get a place to swim Geneva. There are so many restrictions around swimming in the lake. So, yeah, that's kind of my swimming journey. And I run a bit now. I do keep very fit, but I don't. Swimming is my main thing. Outdoor swimming is my main thing now.
It's interesting. There's a lot. There's a lot in there, and beautifully put. But you say you do a bit of running. What's the difference then for you mentally, in terms of your mental health, between going out for a run and going out for a swim? Is there a tangible difference in both activities for you?
Yes, I think one of the things I find with swimming, and it's going to sound really odd, but maybe it only affects me, is I just like the sound. I like the underwaterness of things. I like the fact you can hear a bit of what's going on around you, but mostly you are in your own head and you're with the water. And, you know, it feels very sort of, it feels a lot more spiritual in a way than perhaps running. I like running for being outside and the endorphins and, you know, but as you know, Will, swim fit and run fit are two totally different things. And, you know, swim fit in the pool is very different from swim fit out of the pool. And long, you know, endurance swimming is very different from sprint swimming. So, you know, I found something, I think, that, you know, for women at my stage of life, I can do for a really long time. And also, I found some great women heroes. You know, Diana Nyer, Jamie Monaghan, all these big endurance swimmers, cold water swimmers. Their stories were amazing. And I just thought these, you know, that's quite inspirational. But for me, I think the being in the water is actually what makes the difference outside. It's the real changing. I wear earplugs because when I first started to swim, I used to feel quite nauseous. I used to do loops and loops of Shepparton Lake, and the changing the motion made me. And I swim a lot in the sea in Cornwall, and I find it difficult without earplugs. I feel quite sort of, you know, I mean, sea swimming is a very different thing from lake swimming. I like the fact that I can't hear in the same way. It sort of alters the way I see everything. I think that's quite, I don't know if that's unusual, but I'm not someone who's ever worried about anything that's in the water or, I'm not worried about that. I'm slightly short-sighted. I'm always a bit worried about how far I'm veering off the place I'm supposed to go. But apart from, because I haven't got my prescription goggles yet, but apart from that, I think the water for me is the different sound. It's the otherworldliness of it.
Yeah. Is there something more present then? Because I think you've just described what I feel, which is that being in the water forces you to accept the present moment for exactly those reasons you suggest. Your senses are dialed and you're in your own head. And there's something, as you say, meditative about that compared to running, where of course you can be in your head, but you're much more distracted.
Well, also you can listen to music and run. I don't think, I mean, unless you're like super training in the pool, I don't think you can listen to music and swim. It doesn't seem to kind of, you can listen to it in your head. You can have it in your head. And sometimes I go through whole Wham albums in my head when I'm doing a particularly long swim. But I think you can only swim and you can really only focus on the rhythm of the swimming. And I think the other thing about swimming is the environment is quite, you know, you have to be so aware of it, so it can change. I've done sort of 2-hour guided sea swims where we've set out in the loveliest of waters and it's been flat and then it's just changed in a second, and we've had to navigate massive waves, then it's got suddenly very much colder, and you've got to be so aware, I think, of your environment when you swim outside in a way that you don't have to with running. You kind of know where it's going to be, and if it's raining it's going to rain or you know, stop a bit along the way. But with, you know, unless you're hill running, I think with swimming you've got to be really in that moment, because you've got to be in your own meditation, but you've also got to be incredibly aware of what's going on around you, I think.
And also with running, you can stop and not drown. Whereas with swimming, there's the idea of perpetual movement, isn't there? So let's go back to your amazing Lake Geneva swim, which by the sounds of it seems like that was your first sort of big event.
Yes, it was my first open water. Crazy.
Wow. Why not? Just dive in at the deep end. I love it. So how was that then? Obviously you've been swimming a lot before then as training and you sort of found it. But how was that? Was there a difference when suddenly you were thrust into a team event where there was a real kind of goal? Did anything change for you mentally then? Did your relationship change with the water?
Well, Geneva's a very beautiful place to swim, but it's still a bit tidal because of all the water coming in from the mountains. So there are waves, and the temperature varies considerably across the lake, and depending how deep, I think it's the deepest lake in Europe as well. But, you know, we were very lucky with the weather. It's very sunny. We did it in June, I think, end of June. It was quite cold, the water, I would say, is the only thing. And we'd had to train. In order to do it, you have to pass a channel rules. So you have to be able to do 2 hours in, I think it's 15 degrees or under, isn't it, for the channel in a swimsuit. So, and you can't wear a wetsuit to swim Geneva either. So we, you know, we'd got into a position where we were proficient enough. But what changed for me was realizing that the team is incredibly important. So you can't, you know, when you're getting in for that like second swim in the middle of the night and you haven't had any sleep and you've been awake for 24 hours, that is, you really need, so somebody would swim and somebody would spot on the side of the boat and you would be following, you'd have a light on your hat and you'd be following the light of the yacht, basically, as you do for the channel. But it was quite hard to get yourself mentally in that, you know, to get in that water again. You know, and we hadn't done anything like this, so we didn't know. This was all incredibly new for us. We thought, oh gosh, this is more difficult than we thought it would be.
Yeah.
Better push on through here. But we only did it in an hour stints. I think, you know, next time I would have done it in 2 or 4 hour stints. It's nice to have a much longer swim, but we did what we felt we were proficient in and what we were guided to do. So, but I think mentally it just made me realize that with the right team, you can do anything. That is absolutely impossible. If we'd had the wrong four people, five, six people on that boat. That wouldn't have worked. We had an adjudicator on the boat. You have to have someone sit with you to check that you're following all the rules of getting in and out on the changeover. And she was really unpleasant, actually. She was, she didn't like the beginnerness of us. She didn't think we were taking it seriously. She was an Ironman triathlete, and she wasn't, you know, before we got in, she would always ask, are you sure you can do this? Are you sure you can do this? And it was really undermining of us, but it actually sort of strengthened us as a group, because we knew we would have to back up around whoever was swimming to keep them going. We knew our trainer, Dan, was going to be super fast. So we knew there was someone who was doing kind of 4K in that hour, really, yeah. To keep us going. So we weren't going to take 10,000 years. But, you know, we did well because we pulled together as a team, and it really made me think that, you know, what sports do you get that in? It's quite mm-hmm. rare, I think. Mm-hmm. You don't get that in triathlons. You don't get that in cycling. You don't, you know, if you work as a team, you really, it wasn't every man for themselves. It was absolutely this person is only going to get to the end of this hour if someone else is keeping them going on the boat. So it was, I learned that, I guess. I also had this kind of amazing, I did the sunrise swim, so I was lucky in the rota to get in the dark. And then as I was swimming, the sun was kind of coming up across the Alps behind me. It was just kind of amazing. And you just think, well, I'm never going to have that kind of experience again. And only in swimming would you be able to, I think, to have that kind of sensory experience, the kind of sounds and noises. There's not really another sport you can do that in. So for me, the water, and you know, mentally I thought, well, if I can do that, it was really cold as well. It must have been about 10 12 degrees at that point. And I thought, I got in thinking, I'm not sure I'm going to make an hour in this water now, having done four swims already and already done a night swim. So it was kind of, it really made me realize how strong your brain is when you want it to be, you know, and how you can focus and keep going. That is the thing about swimming. It's about technique and focus and teamwork.
I like that. I've often asked the question to people on the podcast, whether what's more important, is it the actual act of swimming itself, or is it the community that we all find ourselves in? You know, swimming is a very isolating sport. Yet with cold water swimming, especially, and with masters groups, you know, there is a huge camaraderie around swimmers. And I often ask people, what has more value? Is it the, you know, the tea and cake on the beach or whatever it might be after a swim, which is just glorious? Or is it the actual act itself? Or is it, you know, more often than not, it's a combination of the two?
I think so. I think also with swimming, it's you do sort of learn what your body is capable of and how close the mind and body link is, particularly with cold water swimming. So you have to keep going, even though you are extremely cold and everything is telling you this is not going to happen, you know, and you've got claw hand and your feet are freezing and your head is hurting because it's so cold every time you turn, that you can keep going with the right technique and with the right, but you've got to be mentally in the right place to do that. I learned, you know, I mean, my technique is so much better now. I've learned, had some lessons with Kerri-Anne Payne, who I met. I swam the Nevis to St. Kitts nice. Channel swim, which is like I think it's 4 kilometers or something, but it's a really beautiful, I mean I say swim it, we stopped halfway through to look at the wildlife. It was the most, where the two oceans, the Atlantic and the Caribbean Ocean meet, so it was hot and cold and hot. It was quite an amazing swim. And Kerri-Anne, I learned a lot from her on swimming about relaxing, and I had this amazing lesson with a free diver in Cornwall who sadly is no longer with us, Nick's, and she really, we had a 2-hour lesson where I spent 20 minutes in the water, and I was very concerned about how slow I was as a swimmer, and she was more concerned about why I wanted to be faster and how I could relax more in the water, so that I could, because I think swimming is, in technique wise, you really have to be quite relaxed so that you can focus on your stroke. If you're tense, or you know, it's not going to work, it's just not going to power it through, because you've got to go with the water, haven't you? Outside swimming, you've got to be, what, especially in the sea, you've got to go with the water and make all those changes and adapt as you go. And it was a really valuable swimming lesson where I didn't really spend any time in the water, where I'd learned how to just slow down, how to slow down my breathing, how to focus a bit more on not trying to take all the air in at the same time, all of that kind of thing. And I just think that's such a strange, you know, I've only really done running and cycling as others thought. Oh, I did boxing. I had quite spent a year learning how to box properly, but it's, that again is about focus. But this, it's such a strange sport, open water swimming, because it really is the person, the time, the environment, and adapting to it. And really, you have to relax if you're going to do that. Even if you're in a race, you've got a pretty, I mean, I swim faster when I'm much more relaxed. Mm. And you know, it's that thing. We had some lessons at Shepperton with Salim, who's an amazing open water swim coach. He does a lot of yoga, and he has it's all about breathing and getting the mind into the right place. And I learned from him that if I swim slower, I will technically, physically be faster. Mm. You know, my body position in the water is better. I'm not battling against things, and my core is more attached to my head and my legs and all of that. So I think, you know, swimming is so unusual. You learn so much about everything in a way that perhaps you don't with other sports. And I think it is quite addictive as well, isn't it?
Yeah, hugely addictive. There's a question later on about that. But it's funny you mentioned boxing, because this is the second time boxing's come up in these podcasts. And I had an old coach, Tony Pierce, my old swim club will laugh as I drop the Tony bomb again, but he would always equate swimming to boxing as one of the closest things, because it's very isolating. It's actually weirdly the violence in it you have to relax into. I think there's something in that. Given the fact that you learn how to box, are there any parallels that you found between the two?
Yeah, there's a lot of counting in boxing. There's a lot of counting in swimming, I find. Yeah. Especially if you're on a long, you know, and you've got if you're on a very long swim and you've got to fill chunks with things to think about. boxing is not about hitting. It's not about pat. It's about knowing where your body is. It's about counting. It's about thinking ahead. It's a bit like chess. You've got to keep thinking, if I move here, if I move there, what's happening? It's about positioning yourself in the right place. And it is quite solitary. I mean, I think you have to be incredibly focused, I think, to do boxing, in the same way that you need to be really focused if you're going to do a big long swim in the sea. You've got to be really focused on everything and you know, properly working out what you're doing. So yeah, and it's a quite what I hadn't realized about swimming, because I started so late, particularly with front crawl, is how technical it is. So there's just, you know, I've had lessons in a tank that you've been filmed. I've had lessons with triathletes. I've had lessons in the sea, lessons in lakes. And it really is a very, very technical sport. And you do need to know where your elbow is, and then very small tweaks make quite big changes. You know, for ages I was kind of had no power in the back end of my front crawl stroke or my body position. I'm a much faster swimmer in a wetsuit than I am out of a wetsuit, which, you know, obviously means I'm dragging my legs and I'm not as high on the water as I should be. And all of that you need to really think about. And it's the same with boxing. You need to be quite technically thinking about, you know, where the power is coming from. It should be coming from your hip, not from your hand. So it's all of that kind of, yeah, I can see the similarity.
Oh, cool. I mean, I can imagine I'd be a terrible boxer, because it sort of slightly scares me, boxing.
My teacher, I did think at one point, oh, maybe I'll do I'll do it properly. And she said, we had a lesson where she actually hit me, and I thought, I don't like this. I don't want to do this again.
Yeah, I don't like being hit in the face.
It's a shock.
It is. I'm sure it is. Can I just chart back to your when you talked about the perimenopause and how the water was sort of there to hold you, I suppose, and there to sort of help you through it. Is that a journey you can track?
Yeah, I mean, it very specifically was one of the main things. So I present a podcast called Postcards from Midlife, where we talk to women over 40 about this perimenopause journey. We talk to celebrities and we talk to experts, and you know, open water swimming comes up again and again and again, particularly cold water swimming, with this particular age group of women. And I think if you look at the Facebook groups, you know, I meet a lot of women when I travel around the country. I wrote a book on parenting and I went on a book tour last year. And wherever I went, I obviously wanted to swim. So I would go onto the Facebook groups and find a group to swim with. And it was 80% midlife women almost every time I dropped in to swim with complete strangers. You know, it is a really powerful tribe to be part of. As I say, there's a lot of, you know, you lose estrogen from your brain it fluctuates quite significantly as you age as a woman. And there's a lot of research on the link between what's happening hormonally in your brain and Alzheimer's and dementia. And a lot of that is now being carried out on women in midlife who swim, because they're all in that place. That's where they are. So it is, I found it incredibly helpful. I think any activity would be helpful. But I think I found swimming particularly good because that's where my people were. That's, you know, it was, you know, and I think the other thing that one finds as one ages as a woman is you begin to lose your identity around your body because it changes quite considerably in shape and size and weight, and you lose muscle mass, you lose collagen. All of that happens after the age of 40. It happens to both of us, but it happens much quicker to women. So what I found amazing in these groups, particularly in the sea swimmers, is that nobody cares what you look like. Nobody cares, you know, how thin you are, how fit you are, you know, how supple you are. They just don't care, you know. And I would get into the water sometimes with women who were, you know, I'm really tiny. I'm 5'2". I don't have much body fat. So it's, you know, it's a different swim for me from women who are much larger than me. Who've been, I'd get into the water with women who were 10, 20 years older than me, who were 30 times faster, much more proficient, and just joyously doing what they did. And you meet women who've been swimming for years and years and years, women who swam at school, women who swam for the county, but then stopped because of family and work and have come back into it. So it felt to me that this was a great sport because nobody cares what you look like. Nobody cares. And everyone is almost naked. So it's a kind of strange thing. And it, I think it, you can't underestimate how these changes affect women as they age. Not that they're depressed or they want to be younger. They just, it's just a bit of a shock for everything to completely change. So one way of accepting that and dealing with it and this change and transformation in identity is to be comfortable with it, and to be comfortable with it outside in a swimsuit on the edge of a beach is pretty amazing, actually. You know, I think it's really quite an extraordinary thing. I think that's why women of this age group like it.
It's that judgment-free zone, isn't it? Which I guess is synonymous with master swimmers as well. And it's, I think it's the acceptance that we're all getting older, we're all getting slower, you know, and which makes it all remarkable when someone of a certain age group does something extraordinary, whether it's coming to swimming for the first time and learning how to swim and suddenly finding themselves doing what you did in swimming across Lake Geneva. And I like how inclusive it is in that respect.
Also very welcoming. So I've you know, you will sometimes swim on a beach with someone and you'll think, God, that person's got an amazing stroke, that's extraordinary, looks like someone's just fired them out of a cannon. Then you'll find out it's a kind of ex-Olympic swimmer or a master swimmer or something, and it's just, they're very, but those people will be just quite generous in helping you. And but, you know, I have never swum in a place, even when I've got in with really fast swimmers, I've never been left behind. No one has ever gone and just thought, well, I'm just doing this, so I'm not going to look after anyone else behind me. You get in the sea, particularly, I find, you get in the sea and everyone is looking out for you, always. You're usually in your pod, or they work at the pods that work. They're incredibly generous with advice, I find, swimmers, in a way that perhaps, you know, certainly when I was doing triathlons and marathons, things, they, not so much.
Yeah.
Particularly cyclists. Not so much.
Yeah. And it's the old adage that triathlons say, if it's, you know, if it's not on Strava, it doesn't count. For triathletes. Whereas I don't think swimmers particularly care. So that's lovely. So what are your earliest memories then, coming from the Cornish coast? What are your earliest memories then of swimming in the open water?
Well, I remember swimming with my dad, who was quite a good swimmer. So I grew up with my dad and my sister and my mum, and my mum and sister didn't swim, didn't like it. They didn't like to get their faces in the water. But my dad loved swimming, and I liked just being in the water, basically. So I guess my earliest memories of the water are sort of bodyboarding in, you know, on the beach in Polseth when I was quite little, and, you know, camping and staying there. And then I did do some, so we had a swimming leisure centre in near the Comprehensive I went to, but I was just so hopeless at it, and we couldn't afford lessons. So, I mean, I think the problem is when you can't have lessons, you can't really, it can frighten you quite a bit, and it sort of puts you off swimming, I think, I just didn't like indoor swimming. I don't really like chlorine either. It's kind of, and then I didn't really swim. I'd swim in leisure centres, you know, occasionally, but I never swam. I didn't swim properly till I was about 45. So it was kind of, you know, it was never, I never felt like I was getting fit swimming either, because clearly I wasn't. I was just doing breaststroke or backstroke. So there's nothing wrong if you just want to do that, but it didn't feel like it was keeping me fit or could keep me fit. So that my earliest memories really are the beach.
That's quite a nice segue then. So if that person on the beach, and then you sort of had this huge gap from any relationship with the water at all, and you found open water swimming a bit later, if we can then chart, instead of that child on the beach, if we can then chart how open water swimming has changed from finding it, you know, with Dan Bullock and finding it with your swim tribe that went across Geneva to where you are now. I mean, you've talked very eloquently about how your technique has changed, but how has your relationship with the water changed from I guess from those two points?
I think I'm less worried about drowning. Definitely. I'm less worried about going wildly off course and ending up, you know, 3,000 miles separated from my people. I think I'm much, much more adventurous. So I will try a lot bigger swims in deep, you know, I'm not worried about deep water either. Because I think the thing is, when you start late, all those fears that sort of maybe get talked into you as you learn, I didn't really have any of those because I didn't really know it. So I didn't know that that could be a fear, being in deep water. You know, I've got a friend who swims, who's really fearful of being out deeper in the sea. It doesn't seem, just that kind of thing doesn't really bother me. So I think what has happened is I've kind of learned that I could be more adventurous with my swimming. I do certainly want to do some bigger swims as I get older. But I think my relationship with the water is just to know it better. I really respect it. I mean, I know people say, oh, there's so much talk around wild swimming at the moment, how fab. I wouldn't get into any place I hadn't swum before without other people who'd swum there. I just wouldn't. I would think that would be a really silly thing to do. So I'm very respectful of rivers, particularly because I don't swim in a river much, so I wouldn't swim in a river without people I'd known. I'm very respectful of lakes that I haven't swum in, and I'm kind of just a little bit knowledgeable. I will look at the sea sometimes in Cornwall and think, that's, I probably shouldn't go in there today. That looks a bit, you know, there might be a riptide I can't see. So I guess that's my learning has been that it isn't just getting in and swimming. It's kind of, you know, taking everything into account. And, you know, I was for a couple of years, I was very much, I'm never going to wear a wetsuit ever again. What a faff getting it on and off. It's better if you swim without, you know, you're probably going to be a better swimmer. But actually, I did a couple of interviews with Greg White. I think you've had him on the show, haven't you? And he was like, it doesn't matter. You swim in a wetsuit, don't swim in a wetsuit. 10 minutes in, 2 minutes in, 1 minute in, all of it is good. All of it adds up. All of it goes into the tank and banks up. So, you know, just get in the water, I guess, is the key. And I've learned that, particularly with big, long, cold swims, that what you have to do is put your swimming costume literally by the bed so that you put it on first thing. And then there's no way out. As soon as you've got it on, you've got to do it.
I like that. I like that. Then you're fully committed. You know, except I suppose there might come a time when it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon and you put your swimming costume on first thing in the morning. You haven't quite managed to leave the house.
But yes, that has happened.
I can see that. So you mentioned earlier that you're not fearful in the water, in the open water particularly at all. Obviously, there is a degree of respect that comes with open water swimming. But does anything scare you in the open water? I mean, I talk about people having fear factor.
Yeah, I think when I did my Blenheim triathlon, when I did it with a team first time. We did it individually, but together, so it was all great. And it was the first time I'd ever swum in a lake in a wetsuit, but we were only in 20 minutes, so it was all fine. The second time I did it on my own with a friend, and we'd had no proper sleep the night before. We just weren't in the place to do, you know, we did the longer distance, and I got in the water and did the race start, and then I had a panic attack. I had to hold on to a kayak, and I just thought, what the hell is this? This is ridiculous. How can I, this is my happy place. Why can I, I just thought I couldn't breathe. And anyway, so afterwards I decided that that would never happen again, which is partly why, you know, and then I started swimming, and just wanted to get that memory out of my head. But I think it is the breathing that sometimes scares me. I guess it's like occasionally I'll feel a bit claustrophobic. I know that's a weird thing. I did some scuba diving a couple of times, and I thought I'll be fine because I'm not worried about the things in the water. But actually, I didn't like listening to my breathing, was fearful I wasn't going to get enough air in. So I think in my head there's something around, which was why I had the lesson with the freediver, there is something still around, am I going to be able to breathe properly? Will I be able to? I mean, the joy of swimming is obviously you just turn on your back if you're in a panic and you just float and you can pull it all back together again. But I'm not sure psychologically what's going on there. What's kind of, you know, I'm really not. I mean, I've swum through jellyfish. That's not pleasant. I've swum with big fish in the sea, which we, you know, when we did the St. Kitts swim, that was amazing. There were stingrays and all sorts. And I've swum in really kind of rashy lakes. I've seen lots of stuff going on underneath and big fish and stuff. And that's not, doesn't bother me. And I've been slightly fearful in the sea when it's changed suddenly. That has really, you know, there's a couple of swims in Cornwall I've done where the massive waves have taken me out. And I've thought, I'm just not a good enough swimmer to deal with this. And I'm a bit worried about how I don't have the power to get through these things. So I've been through that a bit, but I've kind of got over that now because I just went back in and did those swims with guided tours to try and, you know, swimming is such a learning curve. It's just such an amazing learning curve. But I guess the breathing is the thing that I just can sometimes get into a slight panic with the breathing because I know my technique's not brilliant. So I sometimes think the front crawl, how am I going to deal with this if I get into the panic? So that's just a little thing I think I'm always constantly working on.
Yeah. Was that something to do with this, with the mass start perhaps, that with all those people, those bodies around, just affects that sort of, it sort of, I always find that mass starts, they're really triggering for people's panic response because you've got a load of thrashing arms and legs around you. I mean, it's horrible even for the most experienced swimmers.
I think also when you're a small person, you know, I'm so short and small, I'm just tossed about in a mass start of any kind. I mean, I know some people are pretty tough at it, but I think for me, I think it's probably more about, it took me a long time with front crawl to get the breathing right.
Right.
To get a rhythm right, to get, you know, I breathe both sides, so it's taken me a while. I think it's taken me sort of 4 or 5 years to not take in as much as I possibly can, just in case I don't have enough air.
That's
really difficult to swim if you've got that mindset, I think. It's difficult to do front crawl anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm fine with it now, and I've had enough experience, I think, to get it. That's the only thing that really terrifies me. I think, you know, getting too cold on a longer swim, obviously. Yeah, but I always swim where I can, you know, where there's a kayak or where I'll grab a kayak if I think it's going to reset my mind. Because I'm not ever chasing times or, you know, if I'm racing, it's against me. If I'm trying to improve a time, it's my time against the last time I did it. I'm never bothered about other people. I get a bit panicky if I get left miles behind, but I'm usually in that middle pod. So it's, you know, I can usually get into the same rhythm as people there.
That's nice. I have a great friend of mine who would always say that, you know, in the pool, it's a time trial because you're only ever racing yourself.
Yeah.
In the open water, it's, you know, if you are racing, it's, you know, it's pure racing. Thomas Lertz, who's a famous Olympian, he would always say he was never the fastest swimmer. He was just the best tactician. But I guess you're only, even that is a stretch too far because ultimately you're only ever racing yourself. I mean, that's a great metaphor for life, really, isn't it? You know, there is, if you remove the competition, everything becomes so much simpler in your head. You know, your ego is dissolved. All those things slightly drip away. And I think there is a life lesson in exactly what you just said. Lovely. So someone once said to me, always remember that the water wants you. And you've described a swim that I very much hope to do, which is the St. Kitts swim, which just sounds absolutely idyllic.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Was that a swim that if given the chance you would repeat over and over and over? Was it that magical?
Yeah. I mean, it was completely magical. It was just the most kind, the water is so clear. It's a bit hard to work out where you're going. You just see this island and you think there's no way I'll be able to swim all the way to that island over there. That's ridiculous. But it's much better organized, I think. But it really was, you know, we got a bit lost, but we stopped in the middle bit. I swam with a friend of mine who's a great swimmer and I knew she would be careful enough to look after me. And she's a big sea swimmer. And we just saw everything. We saw stingrays. We just saw beautiful tropical fish. We just, Kerri-Anne Payne did it as well. And she videoed a lot of it, actually. So there's a lot of, we were able to watch it after. It just was just the most amazing swim. You just get to see fantastic things. I mean, the thing about Geneva is there's nothing really to see in the water. It's deep. So it's either dark or black at night, or there's just, you know, there's just water, basically. You're just looking at your hands. It's incredibly clear. It tastes amazing, but there's not a lot to see. we did the Bantham Swoosh this year. I don't know if you've ever done that. There's a lot to see in the water there. It was pretty amazing, actually. Really? And that was a kind of whole new experience of swimming with a tide.
Yeah.
So you get swept quite fast. You're probably at twice. You do it in a wetsuit and you're probably at twice your normal speed. But it's quite shallow in many places. So you can see crabs and fish and it's tropical. It looks very tropical. And it's the sides of it are really beautiful. It's kind of a forest site. And then it goes out into it's the estuary going out into the main sea, and you have to basically be pulled out at the end because it's moving so fast. So that was that's an amazing experience as well. But again, I think, you know, you approach these things, or are you doing it for a time, or are you looking at everything? And I think sometimes you can miss so much stuff if you're trying to hit a time. And that's a mindset I had to get in, because I'm naturally incredibly competitive. So, you know, certainly with running and stuff like that, I was going, how can I, you know, we shave minutes off this, how can we do, you know, for a recreational athlete, because obviously I had a job and four kids, so it's quite difficult to train enough to. I also knew how much you trained would be reflected in your times as well. And I think swimming is different. As I say, I've watched people who swim now and again who are super fast, just amazing, because their technique's so brilliant and they're more relaxed and they're not really racing. So yeah, that's St. Kitts Nevis swim is an extraordinary swim.
You wouldn't want to repeat the hour in the middle of the night in 10 degrees in Lake Geneva then?
Probably not. No, I mean, it did take quite a lot of, I just sitting on the end of the boat, I did take quite a lot of kind of talking myself into the water at that point, because it's cold and it's, you know, your mind can, you can only see the light at the top of the thing and your mind can go off all over the place. In a way, again, as I say, in retrospect, we should have done it in 2 hour swim stints, because you get into a rhythm after an hour and you can keep going. And then we came out and then we had to dry off. And so that's what we would do if we did it again. I think any of the big swims again, we'd do sort of minimum 2 hour stint.
Did anything happen to your breathing in suddenly jumping into 10 degrees?
Yeah, you can't. It's really hard to keep a grip on it and not let your mind panic about, you know, will your hands get too cold? You know, will you just stop move? You know, you can swim and not move, can't you, in water sometimes when you're not, you can be not going forward. And I think that was the kind of, actually what I did was I turned my watch around so I couldn't see it, because I just thought it's better to get into a rhythm than panic about how long I've got left in the water, because it's really cold.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got to say, we'd done those times. We knew we'd done 2 hours in I think it was 13 degrees at Shepperton. So we knew we'd done the swimming in the cold. So we knew we could do it. It was just getting your head into that place, I think.
Yeah, I've got to say, swimming at night was something, when I swam at night on our channel relay, I dreaded it with every fiber in my being, but I knew it was something I had to do if I was ever going to think about swimming the channel on my own one day. And I hated it. I hated it exactly in my head as much as I thought I would. But weirdly, in retrospect now, in my mind, now that I've done it once, I feel confident that it wouldn't affect me in the same way again. Did the night swimming, was it fearful for you at all? Or was the night not even a factor?
Yeah, it was fearful. We had done, we did to get ready for the night swimming, but you know, because we signed up in February for Geneva and we swam it in June, so we didn't have much time. So there weren't many guided night swims happening that we could fit into our schedule. So we did that Henley 1 mile that starts at dawn. So you arrive in the dark and you get in the dark. And we thought if we can get in the dark on the river, then that would give us some sense of what getting in the water in the dark in our swimsuits would feel like, which was quite good. But that is in my top 5 worst swims ever. I think I came last. I just hated it. I hated the whole thing. I was just not in the right place on that day. I was really cold the moment I got in. I couldn't see anything. I didn't know where anyone was. And I swam down the wrong bit of the fork at one point. I had to swim back. It was just awful, awful. And I think,
I mean, there's miserable swims, and that has always been, that's always been high on my list as one of the most miserable swims you can do, for that exact reason. You've got a mass start in the dark. You know, it's what is it? It's what, 1.5 kilometers?
So you've got upstream against the tide, isn't it? Yeah.
So you've got people who are, you know, people who are redlining it, And everything about it is just cold, it's dark, it's just I don't like it. But you know, bravo to anyone who've done it. So I doff my cap to you for doing it.
But I wouldn't do the channel for that reason as well. I don't think I'd deal with the nausea of the channel. I just don't think it would be. I know it's probably not a swim I'd enjoy. You've got to remember, Geneva was pretty flat the night we swam, so there were no kind of big waves, or you know, there were changes in temperature, but there was nothing untoward. Whereas I think the channel, you just don't know, do you? And you've got to keep your head in the game for the whole, you know, if you're going to do it on your own, 15 hours or whatever it takes.
Yeah. But there's something, I guess there's something in that there's a surrender to control what you can control and control what you can't. Yeah. And the thing about that Henley mass start, for example, in the middle of the night is you can't control all those arms and legs and the fact that it's, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning. And it doesn't feel like it's a solitary experience. And so ultimately you are behest of other people's, you know, what other people are doing in the water. Whereas I guess with the channel, if you don't get to do the channel, it will be because of what Mother Nature has decided, not you know, six other athletes around you kicking you in the head.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a fan of big mass starts in any situation. So
I don't think anyone is.
Especially not in the middle of the night. Yeah.
No, exactly. Exactly. So Lorraine, my last question is, where was your last swim? And how was it?
Oh, well, my last swim, it's so annoying, was 4 weeks ago before I got the flu from hell, which obviously you should never swim when you can't breathe or hear anything. And it was 2 degrees at Parliament Hill, Lido, where I swim right the way through the winter usually. But I had to come out after the flu. So I haven't been in since then. But my physical last swim was at the leisure centre last week, where I did just try to get back into. It's a kind of slow climb back, isn't it, to getting swim fit again? And if you want to do length in this time of the year, you've got to be indoors, unfortunately. But I think I'll probably end up at the Olympic Pool in Stratford over the next few weeks, because that's just the most glorious leisure centre to swim indoors in. Shepperton, which has been shut because it's been so cold, it's been frozen over, so we haven't been able to go there. But in February half term, I will be going to Cornwall. So I'll be doing, I like to swim from Damer Bay round to Rock. And I like to swim, if there's no waves, and occasionally it's very flat in the bay at Polesworth, which is normally a surf bay, you can swim backwards and forwards across, which is kind of amazing as well. And you get to see fish and things there. So those will be my next swims.
And you'll do that in February?
Yeah, in a wetsuit, I'll do it in February if it's flat enough. It's not always flat in the bay at the moment, and the sea needs to be right in as well for me to do that. But yeah, I'll definitely swim at Damer Bay in February. And we're going to do the Bantam Swoosh again this year, because it's just one of the most extraordinary swims you can do, I think. And one day, you know, there's a team of us, we'd quite like to swim in San Francisco, you know, where they do the deep open water swimming, because I know there's some big open water clubs there and they do some exciting swims. So I've got in my head that one day I'd like to do some swimming around Alcatraz or that Gibraltar swim, actually, when you can swim across.
I think
it's not far, but it's kind of it's a big ocean swim, isn't it?
It's one of the Ocean Seven, I think. Yeah.
Is it? Oh, I won't be able to do that then.
No. I'm sure you'd smash it. So just very quickly then, you've dropped in the Parliament Lido there.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you miss the cold?
Yes.
What happens when you haven't been in the cold water for a while? Is there anything that you?
I'm grumpy. Is what happens. I find it just the most invigorating, and I think it's like we were discussing this in the sauna at the Lido. So the Lido is 60 metres. It's an amazing place to train. It's the only stainless steel Lido in the country. It's incredibly clean. The staff are fantastic. The community is extraordinary. And the cold is cold. You know, it always feels very cold at the Lido. Yeah. But you can, you know, you stay at 2 degrees. We did two lengths. You know, we got in and got out. And you must only ever stay in for a very short amount of time for that kind of cold water swimming. But for about, I would say, 3 days afterwards, I always feel amazing. I mean, I do cold showers 2 or 3 times a week anyway, just to keep up the, you know, the climatization. But that kind of cold feels fantastic. I don't always put my head in when it's that cold. But, you know, you should never do it, I think, when you've been you've had some kind of flu-y virus or chesty cough. But it is, you know, there's quite a bit of science around it. It does release an endorphins. It puts you into that fight or flight situation, which your body learns to deal with. But the more you deal with it, the better you can deal with it. So the better you feel. And I always think, you know, even if I'm only in for like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, I've done something extraordinary at the beginning of the day, which makes you feel quite perky, I think, for the rest of the day. But I seem to react quite well to cold water. So it makes me feel amazing. I've got friends who hate it, who just wouldn't even, who swim for miles and would never get into water that cold. But I think once it gets under 10, it's quite an adventure.
Yeah. Someone once said to me that actually anything below sort of 6 degrees, is it's all the same. And I know there are people that will disagree with that, and that's fine, because I have no experience in swimming at any of those temperatures. So for her to say that actually anything below six is fine, it's around about the 8, 9, 10 degrees that for her feels really, really dangerous, because her receptors have seemed to be switched on, and actually her body is doing exactly what you say, is going to the sort of fight or flight. But anything below that, her body just sort of almost shuts down. So maybe.
Well, I think also, around 10 or 12, you sort of think you can deal with it. You just think this is a bit cold. And then you reach a sort of level and you think, oh, it's fine now. I can't feel anything. I'll just keep going, which is obviously the danger point, the point at which you should actually get out. But under six, it's like getting into boiling hot water. It's the most extraordinary, strange feeling. And you know, I think you're pretty sure, even the ice swimmers know how long they can stay in there. You just get in and you get out, because you know that's the hit is the water. You know, you could get in and sit in it and then get out. You don't, it's not the swimming, it's more the coldness of the water.
Well, it's making me cold even thinking about it. Gosh. Lorraine, what a lovely start to the week. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. That was beautiful. Thank you, and thank you for being so eloquent.
Thank you. Loved it.
Thank you, Lorraine, for that chat. I love hearing people's stories when they find swimming just that little bit later in life, as in not children. So thank you for taking the time to share your story. It's much, much appreciated. I'll be back next week with episode 8. So until then, happy swimming, one and all.